Hello again and welcome to another episode of Voices from SA. My name is Nicholas Claude. I hope you're keeping well wherever you are listening, whether it be at home, in the car, at work, the gym. It's the joy of a podcast. You can listen wherever, whenever you like. My guest this week is Impor Palane. She's a chef and the founder of the experiential catering company. She calls it Food I Love You, based at the Victoria Yards here in Joburg. Impor left a career in advertising to follow her dream of making a living out of food. We chatted about early food memories. Her mother is a massive inspiration. And then the journey, the leap of faith she took in starting her own business. She's a trailblazer, no doubt, a role model and an entrepreneur. She's very conscious of these things. And she spoke about the importance of representation, particularly being a young black woman in a white, male-dominated profession and, I suppose, world in general. She's also working with the previous guest on the podcast, Luando Caso, on the Including Society project. She caters the Including Society lunches, where a range of people gather to discuss issues impacting the workplace, transformation, role of women. She speaks about how she sort of aligns the food to the space, as it were. Impor has no idea what the future holds, but, you know, chatting to her, and I'm sure you'll get the same impression. It's going to be dynamic. It's going to be big. So please now enjoy my chat with Impor. Impor. That's it. You're Palani or Diani?
I'm both. But I think officially I am Palani now. I need to let go of the Diani. I'm married now. And I've been married for a while. But because the Diani became a huge part of who I am.
Your brand name,
yes,
in a way.
Yes, exactly. Mm. It's been difficult for me to divorce that.
Oh, tricky. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, Impor.
Palani.
Nice to see you here. And thanks for taking the time to visit me here in the studio in Killarney. You moved from a career in advertising. How long had you worked in that crazy business?
Sure.
That cutthroat.
Yeah, it's
way
insane.
Of life.
It's insane. I worked in advertising for about 6-7 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were quite.
I was in it, yeah.
And that was your idea from school, that is kind of what where you wanted to be?
I think I didn't quite follow everything particularly in the way I had carved it out in my mind. So in advertising, I landed up on the side where I wasn't planning to. I was meant to be on the creative side, so in studio.
Okay, and what, on the design sort
on
of?
On the design and I would say more copy.
Right, okay.
Side, and, you know, or strategic planning, etc. And I landed up in the client server side. And that was pretty much my journey in advertising and really, you know, trying to straddle the two and being almost like scolded every time about like, you know, you need to know your
imagine.
Place.
Oh, really?
You know, put your brief in and that's as far as it goes and manage your client. And I was just like, but I truly believe that I've got a lot of creative input that I can give and, you know, help you guys because I understand my client best and what they're trying to achieve. And I can see a little bit beyond, you know, the two worlds. And I don't know why I didn't end up in the creative side. I don't know why. But I also enjoyed client service because I could really speak the language of clients and really get them to, I guess, talk more and understand more where their minds are at and what they're trying to
unlock. And sort of appreciate what you were saying to them about what their potential, sort of understanding their own potential in a way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I understand it can be also quite, I suppose it depends on the client, doesn't it? I mean, that it can be quite a tricky relationship as well, isn't it? Because
it is.
Like the client's always right, so how far do you sort of push that?
I used to push a lot, and I would also get in trouble there. I just, you know, I speak my mind, I guess, you know, I speak my mind and I say what needs to be said right there and then. And it's difficult for me to just do things because you're asking simply for me to do it. Is it right? Sometimes no, you know.
And then you can say that, you have to say that.
Yeah, and I have to say that. And I think that was the beauty of my relationship with my clients. But also then again, it was where the bad, you know, the pitfall would be really, you know. Yeah. So
you're in this kind of burgeoning now career in advertising, and you then sort of decide to take a leap into the unknown and create Food I Love You,
yeah.
Which is your company. Maybe just tell us a little bit about Food I Love You before we get into kind of that leap.
So Food I Love You is an experiential catering company. It took me a while to really define myself and really what it was that set me apart. The defining moments, or really what gave birth to the business, was really in the most simplest form. How I came up with the name, as an example, you know, I literally thought, love food.
Like, I love you.
There's nothing more to it, you know, and it was like an ode to food. And I was like, I really genuinely, from the depths of me, this is the one thing that brings me a lot of joy and happiness. And I feel just everything will be fine just after I have a good meal, you know. So that's really how it started. And I think Food I Love You and allowed me to reimagine my life again, like new, you know. And I think that was why it was important for it to carry so much emotion in terms of how I ran my business, and then also the name, you know. It had to carry a lot of feeling. That's
because there's sort of a couple of different components to Food I Love You. I mean, you're kind of you're a pop-up restaurant at the Victoria Yards, and then you also have a catering side. Is that how? Is that the correct way to understand it?
Yeah, so it's a catering.
Because it's quite
business.
A multifaceted.
No, not really. Oh, okay. I mean, I think like I get pulled in different directions, I guess, sometimes.
Making menus and.
Yeah, so Food I Love You, first and foremost, is a catering business. It's a catering business, but I prefer to refer to it as a experiential catering. And what I mean by that is that we really pay attention to creating experiences for people. So it's not about simply putting food on a plate, you know, and serving it. It's the story behind it. It's, you know, the people who are working. It's everything that you experience the moment you walk into a space where we're working, into our private dining studio, etc. I think it's every little thing for me is part of the story that you know, that weaves
the
together.
Look and feel and smell and
sure,
taste.
For sure, you have to engage all the senses, and that has been the single biggest thing for me, the driver for me in my business, and I think the reason also for the success of the business.
We'll talk a little bit more about that sort of leap that you took. I'm just wondering, you know, Food I Love You, I'm a very keen I'm a cook, I suppose. I like cooking food. I'm not so much a baker as much as I'm.
The
oven
too,
baking
actually.
Still sort of scares me a little bit. After three flops of my scones, I was like, damn this, I'm going to do something else. But I can remember, actually, one of my early food memories, I suppose, was when I was still quite a young lad. My mum did a lot of cooking and baking, and, you know, we were always, like, in the kitchen, like, either helping to mix the cake mix or you know, always looking to lick the bowl of the chocolate icing at the end.
That's true.
But is there a sort of early memory for you of food? Of did your mum do the cooking at home, and has that been the sort of root of your cooking experience, would you say?
Definitely.
Or is there something outside of that even?
Definitely. Where else can you have a memory of food except at home? And a memory that is warm and fuzzy, and you know, it just, it takes you back home. And yeah, my mom has always created the most memorable food experiences for us. You know, having people over, family, etc. She used to make a big deal of it, you know. She would not bother anybody, you know, wake up either 2 or 3 a.m. and, you know, start cooking.
And cooking for a lot of people now.
Cooking for a lot of people, you know. But she just did it with so much diligence and just like...
Ease.
And there wasn't even a fight about like, okay, guys, you guys need to wake up and you need to help me. She was just, you know, she knows what she needs to do and this is what she'll do. And she'll make sure that at the time when it's lunchtime, you know, the food is there.
It's done.
And everybody enjoys. And her food had so much... It has so much simplicity. Like...
What was the favorite thing that she cooked for you? Can you think of when you were at school, for example?
My mom makes the best steamed bread, like le dombolo. It's absolutely insane. Like, still till this day, I don't know her recipe.
You can't replicate it.
I don't know. Well, number one, like you, I don't like working, kneading and baking stuff. It just sometimes makes me go a bit crazy. But she does it so well. She makes the best rice, like she makes like a savory, like almost like biryani rice, and she'll add in lentils in there, and it's just like so fragrant and so, oh my word.
Are those sort of things that you sort of feed off into your current day? I mean, that your kind of, is it, you wouldn't even, I don't want to call it traditional cooking, but your home cooking. I mean, did your mom used to cook all kinds of stuff?
So my mom traveled a lot.
What did she do?
What does she do?
She's still alive.
No, she's still alive, but she's retired now. She was a social worker, a psychologist. But she was, she's very into her spirituality, so she traveled a lot through that, you know.
With the church, or was this, what, was she like a traditional healer?
No, she's a Reiki master, she's a yogi, she's everything,
wow.
You know, she's done it all. So, yeah, I know, it's insane.
Wait, and where was this that you grew up?
In Protea North, in Soweto, so imagine.
Okay.
Being raised by a woman who's, she's 67, I think, this year, and... She
still
was
full
not,
of life.
Yeah, and she was not the typical mom. And I think for me, I used to fight it a lot because I was just like, other mothers wake up on a Sunday and they cook and they go to church. Yeah. And then we come back from church and we have the seven colors spread. Why are we not that family, you know? Why are we not that family? Yeah.
You didn't realize the kind of special experience you were having in
a way. Exactly. I wasn't even trying to see that, you know. I was just like, okay, why are we with these
mom,
people
can't we just
today, you know? And we're doing meditation. I don't want to do meditation. Like, what is this meditation stuff? Who are these people, you know? So that was my life, really. And I kept fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. But it also came with really good food because, you know, just...
All
being
different
in like
other
Indian
influences,
now I'm just like eating, like, wow, this is good. Like, are you sure it doesn't have meat? You know, and I was like, this is really good. So she would.
Was she like mainly vegetarian then as well?
So
that's also quite unusual, isn't it? I mean, from African kind of perspective. Yeah. I mean, where meat is so.
I had my first oxtail. I think when I was in my 20s.
Sure.
I had, like red meat, I actually started eating it more in my 20s because the most red meat I would have like was mince, I think. But otherwise I would have like your poultry or fish. But most of the time like
most
vegetarian.
And your dad, where is he in all of this?
Who knows? Yeah, it's one of those.
You didn't
know
him?
No.
Okay.
But my understanding is that he is in Venda. I did meet him once, but awkward introduction. What a shame, actually, because, I mean, I would have loved to have that as part of my story, you know, have a little bit of vendor culture coming through with my food, but it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I suppose, I can't comment on that. I mean, I just hear that story quite a bit, you know. That a lot of the people that I've interviewed over the last year and a half, it's well, I mean, I always tell that story when I was in first year university, that was 1982, and this is of course an all-white university then. There was a smattering of black students allowed into university at that time. There was a hall of 400 kids, and the lecturer asked, how many people in here? And we were 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
How many people in here's parents are divorced? And a sea of hands went up. Sure. I was absolutely shocked to my core, because I don't think I knew a divorced
family
at that stage in my life. So I suppose it was just, I was kind of, shows how out of touch I was, I suppose, with the sort of general thing. Okay, so you're in the kitchen with your mum. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I've got an older sister. She's 9 years older than me. Yeah.
Oh, that's quite a gap.
Yeah, it is.
But you do know her as well.
Yeah. Her and I were close, but it took us a while.
Because that is quite a gap.
It is quite a gap. We don't share the same father, but I think that has never really been
a hindrance.
No. Yeah. I mean, she's my mother's child, and that's all that matters, we're siblings,
Sweet.
I don't even consider that she's my half-sister, it's just
absolutely absurd. Together,
And
so you're cooking, you're going to school in Soweto then at that time?
No. I used to go to school in Belgravia at a convent school called Dominican Convent. Yeah, so I went there, and it was
a Catholic school.
Yeah, it was a Catholic school, but an amazing school. It had such a great family orientation to it. And I was there only for 7 years, so grade 0 till grade 5. And still till this day, I have a very clear memory of the day I left. I think I remember the date. I think it was the 9th of May.
And what year would that have been?
I think it was 97.
Okay. And so you finished school then early 2000s?
2004, I matriculated,
Crikey.
Yeah. Insane.
That makes me feel old. I'm talking about 1981.
I know. Yeah, so that was me. And
do you still have friends from that time? Or was it more just the community? What was the feeling of this? You say family.
Sure, it was family. It was just
because I have this impression of Catholic schools being quite sort of severe and
not at all. I can't pinpoint what it was about that school, but I think everybody who went to that school, whether you were there for a year, 2 years,
had something.
You still identify yourself as. As a Dominican,
a Dominican old girl.
Yeah, and oh,
jeez.
Yeah, so I was there for, till grade 5.
And then where did you go to for high school?
I finished primary at a school in the south of Johannesburg called Forest Primary. And then I went to high school at Sir John Adamson High,
I don't even know where that is.
Yeah, no, it's in Winchester Hill, so,
Oh, man, you're talking about another part of Joburg. I'm just saying, I don't even come from around these parts.
Yeah.
And you're kind of falling in love with food all the time you're helping your mum's bits and pieces.
Yeah, because she was also traveling a lot, I would sometimes stay at home alone.
Right.
But that's when I was just hey, my friends, instead of us going out, come over and then let me cook.
Okay, so you had that sort of catering bug.
Yeah, no, I was just always hosting people, cooking.
Yeah.
My first memory, I always remember my first dish being, or something that I thought geez, I pulled this off quite well, was chakalaka.
Okay.
And I was damn, that was a very good chakalaka,
Because maybe just to explain to
so
the
chakalaka
listeners.
Is a South African relish. It's made of baked beans and carrots, grated carrots that we kind of cook for a long time. And it's just all infused really with like Indian spices.
It's got a bit of spice in it as well,
Got, some,
it's a sort of sweet, spicy kind of relish,
yeah.
So I suppose you'd call.
Yeah.
Pickle, half sauce.
Yeah, half sauce, yeah.
Sort of kind of sums up South African cooking in many ways, I have to say, because I think we do have quite a confused food culture.
Yeah. No, completely.
Quite a conservative food culture, would you say? I mean, how do you find introducing new tastes and new ideas to people?
Yeah, sure. My people are very skeptical, number one. we like to eat heavy. It's almost like we're eating like it's our last meal, I think, in South Africa. I mean, I'm talking specifically for like the black culture. When we eat, we want to see everything, like every
pile it on.
Yeah, pile it on, like three different starches there. You know, we overcook our foods most of the time. You know, and I think very limited use of vegetables sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's why I think in the beginning of me cooking, I wasn't really interested in profiling and, you know, focusing on South African food. I was just like, there's nothing more for me to learn. Like, there's nothing here, you know.
Get much inspiration from it?
Well, that's what I thought initially, you know. And it's funny that one of my favorite cuisines, which is like Middle Eastern food, I actually now think back and I'm like, but this is pretty much like South African food, you know? Like we enjoy, they also enjoy food that's like, it's like very, you don't cook it quickly, you know? It's like really long, drawn out and, you know,
processed to everything.
And a process. And I think that is pretty much our food, you know? Like we enjoy stews and our stews are very like, you know, ladled and quite like heavy and, you know, rich. So I find that is the similarity with like Middle Eastern food. Yeah,
I suppose on the flip side, in our history and even in our present, I mean, poverty obviously has a massive influence on poverty income. Let's put it like that. Income plays a large part in what people are cooking. And I suppose, I mean, if you know, okay, government food recommendations that you should eat chicken, fish, meat, milk, eggs at least once a day or at least once a week or whatever it is. But I mean, you know, you check these young guys in the pick and pay at lunchtime, builders on off site with a loaf of bread and a 2 liter Coca-Cola, and that's probably going to be shared between a couple of guys, and that's their...
Yeah,
is that
they're
probably the main meal of the day?
Yeah.
Okay, they're working on a site, so they're not going to pick up the kgs. But you can imagine a lot of people are eating unhealthily because they see it as the cheaper option. When I don't know, maybe it is or it isn't. Have you thought about that?
No. So yeah, I mean the big thing, it's really our food culture was really around people filling up stomachs, and I need to get full in the quickest way. And the thing so that's why pap is such a big thing, you know. People eat it and it does a job. Like, you can go to sleep and your stomach will be full until, you know, lunchtime the following day.
Exactly.
And I think it just created such a lack of understanding beyond that, like what is there available as a, you know,
alternative,
you know. And, you know, besides pap and mealie meal, etc., what other grains or what other things do we have, you know, that can serve the same purpose as we're saying?
Is that something that you're trying to do, is kind of educate people as much as feed people?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, when I deliver to maybe I cater for offices and stuff, and, you know, you meet different people, and people obviously come together to work, but it's different cultures, etc. And you can sometimes, you know, when you're putting the food down, you can hear murmurs and some people commenting here. Like, for me, in a workplace, nobody should be eating any carbs that are going to slow them down and, you know, make them more lethargic, etc. So I would go for, like, you know, a brown rice as opposed to, you know, a white rice, etc. But you'll hear people still saying, you know, certain things like, what is this, you know. Last week Friday I also had clients saying something like, oh my gosh, what is this black rice and quinoa stuff, and doesn't look like something we'd eat. And then they try it and they're like, oh, okay,
yeah,
maybe not so bad, you know. But I think
it's kind of lack of imagination or lack of education.
It is that, but you have to have some element of empathy to it. And I think, like, an understanding of like how far do you push them or how far do you introduce them into certain things, you know?
Yeah.
And
you, I suppose you always try and have something quite a little bit familiar on the, as long as you, if you're introducing the black rice, there's got to be like a piece of meat there or something like that. Just so the guys kind of don't panic completely.
No.
So it's quite a tricky, tricky little dance. Yeah.
But I mean, for me, that's also, I think, how I eat, because I can't say like this, these are my origins and, you know, this is what I've known. And I used to eat some of this food and, you know, I know a little bit better now, but I still enjoy some of this stuff, you know. So I think there has to be a bit of a balance because we're here to live and enjoy, you know. You can't eat like, you know, just greens and quinoa and, you know, stuff that doesn't make you happy. I mean, it might be good for you, but doesn't all
spread,
come together.
Spread your wings a bit,
you know?
Yeah.
Have a stew, have a, I don't know, dal or something. Yeah.
I mean, veganism seems to be quite a big trend now. Have you noticed that yourself? And how do you sort of
deal with it? I used to hate vegans. I was like, why are you guys living, actually? What are you guys doing? So that was quite funny, actually. And I was just like, yeah, this is how it is. Like, you know, vegans. Mm.
Sorry,
what
back
vegans,
of the queue.
Actually, you know, the back of
the
queue.
Eat the leftovers, there'll be some rice for you.
Exactly. But it's so funny. In life, if you're not open to learning, what the hell are you doing? So I found myself actually starting to dabble in vegan food a lot. And I'll be proud to say, whenever I have, like, every month when we open as a pop-up restaurant, we have pretty much about 12 to 15 different offerings for vegan.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah,
for vegans. That is impressive.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, my sister's been a vegetarian now for 40-odd years. Mm. Sorry, I know if I got that wrong. but about that, and she's got 4 kids, 3 of whom are also quite committed vegetarians. Mm. Her husband is, I'm happy to say, not. But I remember, you know, when she was a kid, you know, just to go out with the family for dinner, you know, there was very little, just in basic sort of vegetarian options. Mm. And even today in a lot of restaurants, you know, especially as, well, a mainstream kind of restaurant that's neither a steakhouse or whatever, vegetarian options do seem to be still few and far between, you know, or sort of the same old thing, you know, not a lot of imagination. But let's talk a little bit about now the day you opened Food I Love You. Can you just take us a little bit through that process? Because you were obviously a bit of a pioneer, I've written down here, trailblazer, in the fact that you're a young black woman starting a catering company. And it's kind of you're an entrepreneur at the same time. You have to have some kind of vision, and I suppose you have to be quite brave. Mm. What were you feeling, and what were the kind of powers that you drew on to kind of take you
to take me forward? Sure, I didn't imagine this was going to be it. You know, I just thought I was going to be cooking. The entrepreneurship thing, I didn't think about it. I was just like, okay, I need to register a business. And I did that. And then things just started like snowballing, you know. And I remember my first event, I think it was catering for a friend's boyfriend, his birthday party. And I said to my friend, like, just buy me ingredients and I'll cook. Just don't stress about it, you know. And I did that and everybody was quite impressed. Oh, give me details. And I was just like, okay, so this means that I'm actually running a business, you know. And things just started happening. I didn't plan to...
You didn't really have like a marketing plan or anything like that?
Not quite, but I mean, I think over time, obviously, I had to get that. I was actually telling Boipulo earlier about that, and I had an opportunity. So it's so weird. Like, a lot of things had been coming towards me and, like, a lot of opportunities. And when I had a daily restaurant at UJ for about 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that also just happened. It kind of like fell on my lap. You know, I got a call the one day and this lady was like, oh, you know, I had your food at the Arts and Culture Trust function the one day and I kept your card. Do you remember me? And I was like, of course I do remember you because you're like on TV and that's what I really, you know. And she kept my card for like 2 whole years.
So even at UJ, you're catering, you're doing some sort of cooking?
No, so I closed at UJ and she was working at UJ now at the arts in the Arts and Culture Department. And she was like, come meet me for coffee, you know, let's discuss this, you know, proposition and like you tell me what you think of it. So I met with her and I had just gone back to advertising, by the way. And we met, we had coffee and she was like, no, you know, there's this opportunity for you to run this restaurant, coffee shop and also cater as for the art center. And I was like, okay. Sounds a little bit too big for me, you know, but I didn't say that to her. And I was like, yeah, sure. Don't worry. What do you need from me? She's like, proposal, this. And I ran away. I ended off that meeting there and I just never came back to her.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I never came back to
her. You panicked a bit.
I panicked. I was like, I'm not coming back. I'm not going to respond to this. This is way over my head. Huh. And
you know, sometimes it's a good thing to realize that you're over your head.
For sure. But I was actually lying to myself because I ended up doing it and I did it and I did it very well. I ran the space for 2 years, but in that time, I also realized.
You did get back to her eventually.
Eventually. Oh, no. The reason why I got back to her is because the same client that she experienced my food from booked me, but this time at UJ at their space. So she was like.
And you were there. And she was
sorry,
there.
I'm still waiting for. And I was like.
Snap.
Okay. So I had to get back to her.
Was that a bit awkward?
It was. But I think I was in that moment of her telling me that she's still waiting for me. I was like,
Okay. Yeah.
They're waiting for you.
Yeah.
They're waiting for you. Just answer. Heed the call. And I did that. And I was there for 2 years. And it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, a lot of sacrifice.
But an incredible grounding then for your next phase, right?
Definitely.
It's like an apprenticeship almost.
Definitely. I mean, my kitchen was tiny, but I mean, I had to equip it myself. They were like, you know what, we'll give you the space, bring in your own equipment, which is also,
what
I know.
What the heck?
Yeah, I know.
But like ovens and...
Ovens, etc.
Whoa.
I had to get, my mom went and got a loan in her name for
good
me.
Good heavens.
My sister's husband, my brother-in-law, I loaned money from him. But if I tell you, I was able to pay my mom back in the next 4 months, I think. I was able to pay my brother-in-law with the first event that I got.
Wow.
It was insane. And I just worked. And with, you know, the little equipment that I started.
And it's just you?
Yeah, pretty much. And like my husband would obviously help, but he wasn't.
Oh, bless his heart.
I know, hey, I know. But, you know, he wasn't like, every time he'd always remind me, look, this is your business. This is your business, you know. And I did it. And then I also fell pregnant in that time. And
oh,
then,
my goodness.
Yeah. So
you had a baby while you were at this very fledgling sort of stage, you know.
And it was insane.
Wow.
I left my child probably a week after giving birth to her. I was peeing on myself while standing serving people drinks before I delivered her because it was madness. Like I was working. That's all I knew and that's all I know. So that happened and then I just got to a stage where I was like, you know what? It's 2 years in now and it's been good, but I felt like also being in a university environment, you really can only do so much, you know, and there's
what,
only
what do you
so
mean
many
by that sort of that quite so a I mean limited that,
yeah,
sort of range
quite,
of
yeah.
what you're going to produce just
yes.
in terms of the capacity you have.
Exactly.
It's got to be like one pot kind of stuff,
know,
not
yeah.
too complicated.
Exactly that
start
you know.
A main course dessert off
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, so I mean like if I would get like really great events sometimes, like I did the PPC Imaginarium openings, which were like amazing, and I would like go wild in terms of being creative there and come up with like crazy menus and do installations of food, etc. But then the rest of the time, then you're having to feed students, and then there, like, it's mess. It's
yeah.
And I was just like, oh,
mince this and is, spaghetti.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of crafting my business and shaping my business, and it's not shaping it in the space that I want to, you know,
be yeah, playing. Your mind was yeah. bigger than the,
yeah,
the space.
Yeah, no, for sure. And mm-hmm. I'm really interested in, like, where is the evolution of food, like where is food taking us and how we also consuming food and etc., you know. And I had to take the leap of faith, and I bumped into this place called Victoria Yards, and I was like, okay, let me go check it out. And I went, and I was just like, this is it. This is it. This is it. I need this place.
And when was that, the
last
new start?
Year.
Okay.
Last year.
So what, like within the year, last year?
Yeah, so last year, I think I went to go see Victoria, it's probably like May, April-ish.
And so it's pretty much a year ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you, yeah. And I went to go see the space and I was like, yes, this is it. And the landlord was like, okay, fine. I'm going to come to your establishment at UJ and I'm going to come and taste your food and see if you're right
fit in, yeah.
You know, because he kind of curates his
tenants.
He wants
a certain feel. Yeah.
You know, and he came, he had a look around in my kitchen and he had a look at my food and he was like, okay, you can dish up for me because I used to have like a mini harvest at UJ. So like it was the lecturers and more the post-grads who would come and eat, you know. So he sits down and he has his food and I think like within his first
couple of bites,
you know, bites, he was like, okay, so I've got a space that I'm thinking for you, so we need to come and you need to come and choose and blah blah blah. And I was like, oh, so it's happening. And that was me. And my husband was like, you're crazy, you need to think about this. And I was like, no, I'm not thinking, I'm doing it, and I think this is the right move. So I moved into Victoria Yards, and it took me about 3 months to get my space ready. It was a very grueling, tough 3 months. It was winter. It was lonely.
It's quite chilly down there, I imagine, in the valley.
Yeah.
Are you just sort of prepping the space there or at this time, or are you actually producing any food?
No, I was actually cooking.
Okay, so you're just building.
I was building. Money was just leaving the account. Money was literally just moving out of the account, and I would get like take on like one or two few
just
gigs.
Just to get something.
But the rest of the time it was just spending, having to deal with contractors, which is the bane of my existence. And it made me angry. I was very angry in that time, I guess, also.
Things just moving slowly.
And also just encounters of different people and men, you know, and it was just like this, you know, toxic masculinity of like people trying to like either cheat to think that you don't know anything,
right?
You know, and I was just like, they're trying to also like show them how feisty I am, and like, you know, I know exactly what's happening, and I'm going to be on site every day and making sure that everything was right. And then, yeah, eventually the madness had to stop at some point, you know, and we had to start cooking.
Yeah, and we did. You've moved into it's still, I mean, such a male-dominated, I suppose white male-dominated. I don't know of any black chefs even. I suppose there's, what's his name, Ruben Riffle, whatever his name is, a sort of celebrity chef, one or two others, let alone a black woman chef. I think there's probably a handful. You probably know all of them in this country, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, just can you just talk a little bit about, I mean, you've sort of alluded to that. I mean, is it do you have to sort of doubly convince people that you can cook, or I mean, is there an immediate sort of, can you sense when people are kind of quite shocked that it's you, a black woman, that has produced this lovely food that sits in front of us?
I think, you know, chefs have a thing. They have an alter ego, you know. I don't know when they switch it off, actually, but they have an alter ego. And I didn't want to be that. I've never wanted to be that, you know. Like, my food is simple. My food is approachable. and I don't know how to do these drizzles and all those things on plates, you know,
foams and
emulsifications of this and that. And I mean, like, it's all lovely, but let's get down to basics. People need to eat, and people need to eat good food. Food, for me, the measure, the ultimate measure is flavor, you know, and that's the most important thing. It's flavor, it's how it looks, how it sounds when you're chewing, you know, everything about it. And that's, those are the most important things. And for me,
it's a functional sort of approach, not a work of art that you're trying to do.
And I think it's allowed me to be confident and not to feel like you're playing in a space of, you know, people who are big dogs and stuff, you know, and here you are coming with, like, I don't know, what is this really, you know? So I haven't really allowed myself to feel under some sort of
extra scrutiny.
Yeah, or pressure.
You just present the food and it sells itself, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's simple.
Do you see yourself ever as a role model? Because, you know, I hear more and more with many people that I've spoken to over the last year or so, and again, sort of coming from the Black experience, how important it has been for certain people to meet somebody their own color doing what they want to do, or setting an example of what is perhaps possible, whether it be a pilot or an engineer or whatever, a lawyer or an artist for that matter. Do you feel any of that pressure, or do you feel, I won't say a duty, but yeah, maybe just, do you notice something like that?
Definitely. I think representation matters, and being a black female, it matters even more because, you know, we're underrepresented in all spheres, I think, really. And I think also it's become one of my most important thing. Like, when I wake up in the morning, that's the one thing that I know that I'm doing it for, you know, the future generation. So I find it quite weird because sometimes when I'm interacting with people, I'm on that mindset, but I think sometimes people are just like, you know, either, let's say, for instance, you're coming to get a job, you know, and you want to work with me. And I'm like, but you need to realize that this is what's at stake, you know. You're not coming here just to come and work, you know. What are you here to do? Yeah, exactly, you know. And like, also, if you have been watching me from a distance and you want to come and work with me, gain as much knowledge as you can, you know. Like, if this is not where you want to be in the next 2 years, be a sponge. Learn as much as you can. Use me, you know. And it's important, you know, and get what you need so that you can move forward with that, you know. But yeah, I think representation matters a lot. Girls, it's a tough world for women. You know, our voices are not heard. We don't get invited to the table. We don't even ask to be invited to the table most times, you know. We are always sitting in a corner waiting for somebody to be like, oh, you know, I notice you, I see you, I see what you're doing, come and talk with us, you know, come and be at this table. And I think if we can unlearn that and, you know, start dominating certain spaces, etc. And by that, when I say dominating, it doesn't mean that we need to act like a man. We need to stay being women. You do it in your own way, but as a woman, you don't need to now change yourself to become a man and, you know, have masculine traits and, you know, treat people in a certain particular way, just so that you can
be felt.
Exactly. You
or
know,
noticed or whatever.
Yeah, but I think for me, it's been tough, and I feel like I'm tough, and I'm tough on people sometimes, I think. Sometimes not warranted, but because I'm always realizing what's at stake. And I never want to lose sight of that. Like, I think it's important. And so much work still needs to be done. And I think we cannot lose sight of that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things that women seem to face that men don't face. You know, if men act like idiots or behave in a certain way, they're sort of treated as individuals, as assholes or whatever. Whereas if a woman acts in a certain way, she's kind of representing now all women or all black women or whatever. And so you become an example for a whole group instead of, okay, you may be just an asshole who's behaving in a horrible way.
Mm. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So that takes us on nicely to the work that you're doing with Luando Gasso, who I interviewed I chatted to a couple of months back, who works at Con Hill, and she has this project, including Society Project, the lunches that you are catering.
Yeah, yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about how that happened and you know, what you're trying to do with those lunches from a food perspective as much as a kind of meeting place for people.
Sure. It was such an amazing meeting of two minds, you know. Luando is daring. She's everything I want to be, you know. She speaks her mind. She speaks so eloquently. She knows what she's here
writes,
to do.
Writes beautifully.
She writes beautifully also. She knows what she's here to do. And, you know, she... wow, like, what can I say about her, you know? So when I met Luando, it was through our common sponsor / mentor. And he left the table that day and we were there together and we carried on talking, exchanged numbers. And it's just, you know, I'm shocked that it's actually been a couple of months because I feel like I've known her for years.
Yeah, I was asking
now,
you before we started talking and you were kind of amazed yourself.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I met Luando this year. Like, it's actually been only this year. And I mean, our relationship, how we respect each other is also quite, like, you know, key. So Luando runs Including Society and she came up with this and really just to tap into and shine the light on what the workplace looks like and what corporate looks like in terms of transformation. Women, where do we fit in? You know, is there a fit for us? You know, are companies really taking transformation seriously? Mm. Or is it just a whitewash thing or like a
tick
thing
box.
That...
box.
You know, exactly, you know. So, and I wasn't thinking about it from that perspective. And she's just really... this journey with her has also been like a lot of personal development for me. I'm learning a lot just to also meet different women from different spheres and people holding high positions and, you know, them telling you what actually happens in these boardrooms, you know, and the conversations that happen and where they fit in and how they try to, you know, obviously fight this battle also. So,
I mean, what is the sense that you get is that, I mean, the transformation is not happening and...
It's like you say, it is a tick box, I think, in most spaces. And I think a lot of teaching or a lot of conversation is happening amongst women and not with men.
With the companies that they work
in. Yes, for sure. And not to say, you know, how are you guys engaging and how are you guys treating women in the workplace? What can we do to start changing? You know, even small things like, you know, maternity versus paternity, you know, men should take the same time off. Is it not, you know, we should both be at home nurturing a child if we supposedly say we're equals or, you know, so there's a lot of things that we need to start thinking and learning as a society. And Including Society has really been about that and bringing people from different walks together to talk about very uncomfortable conversations, you know, like we look at the white female group and how amongst all, I think they are probably one of the most protected, you know, they don't get to experience things like we do, you know, and I think just to have a white female at the table and talking her perspective, I think is very important. And to understand and to hear her and to listen and not be judgmental has been a learning for, I think, a lot of people who have been part of the lunches. So my role was then to bring the one thing that would make it easier, I would say.
Good food.
You know, good food. You can't be mad when you're eating, right? You can't be mad. So the food was there as the conduit, as the, you know, let's calm down, guys, you know. And then
literally
some,
breaking bread.
Exactly. Breaking bread whilst having tough conversations. So my menu then evolved and also became about then really delving in and looking at like, okay, cool. If we're hosting it at Constitution Hill, what can I bring in that, you know, speaks to that and speaks to transformation looking at Con Hill? So
with the last lunch, it was a prison site as well.
Exactly. You know, so with the last lunch, we held it in one of the, in the Old Fort atrium, and it's got such a cold and, you know, unwelcoming and, you know, eerie kind of, yeah. And it's just like,
quite cool.
Yeah, and it's loaded, you know, it's just heavy.
Echoey sort of.
Yeah, exactly. So I then looked at, like, in terms of the food groups that the prisoners used to eat, you know, and then I pulled from that to come up with my menu. So it's interesting, but it's also like, you try and take.
So what
that,
are you? What are you? What are you? What are you drawing? I mean, what are you looking at there, food group wise?
So there's this one chart that shows the difference between, like, you know, the black, white, and coloured
prisoners. They eat different food.
Yeah, of course.
I suppose.
And like the black prisoners really had vegetables, they had like more of like beans and sampan beans. Exactly. So we pulled from that, you know, and I was like, no, let's have some
sampan
of those.
Beans can work.
You know what I mean? Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we pulled from those kind of things. I had millet also on the menu. Yeah. So it's things that we've been eating, but then how do we also then just bring it to the table just in a different...
Take it up and level,
know,
as it were.
Yeah, exactly. You know, having soup, the soup, I added in madumbe as dumplings also in it. So it's just like very interesting and I think challenging for me also approaching that every time, because I have to actually do a lot of work and
quite a bit of research
research, and also to come up with a menu that would be reflective.
But I mean as you say, that, you know, the white black colored prison experience also, I suppose, would reflect those apartheid years in a through food in a way. It's I'd never sort of thought about that. Yeah. So now tell me, what's happening next?
Sure. What's happening?
Where does
next?
The empire go next?
I'm scared. I'm scared because everything.
Wait, I mean, would you like to open now your own restaurant? Do you think move beyond the pop up,
or is
this your space now? Your catering.
Yeah, I think
once a month is enough for you.
Yeah, a restaurant is a very interesting space. Like, people
sounds
really,
like a hell of a lot of thankless work.
It's a lot of work, but also people who are coming to dine are coming to dine for different reasons, and I think I want people to pause when they have to eat. I want people to stop what they were doing and whatever else that they had on their mind and just be in the moment, you know. And I think the restaurant and coffee shop spaces are kind of starting to take away from that, because you could be there and you're using it as your mobile office, you know, you're just like on the
not
computer.
Even concentrating
you're
on
not
what you're
concentrating.
Eating in a way.
Exactly. So
especially during the daytime, I suppose.
Exactly. So I want
dinner's a little bit different to lunch, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, true. So I enjoy the more focused kind
experiences.
Yeah. And that's really what I thrive at. I like to meet people. I like to meet people one on one and, you know, spend time with them, sit with them whilst they're eating, eat with them, you know. That's really where I'm at. But in terms of where I'm going, I just think, like, it's going to be big, bigger than what I could ever even imagine myself. I get excited and I'm also scared. I pray every day that I just hold on, hold on. You know, it's tough. But I have had so many markers along the way that have kind of reaffirmed that I'm onto something good, that I'm doing the right thing, and I'm doing that one thing that I've, like, it's my calling.
And it's amazing to be in that position in a way, isn't it? I mean, there's so few people who get that opportunity, I think, to kind of, I know it sounds corny, but to live your dream, as it were. So that's quite something. So give me your, like, favorite three-course meal.
Sure. On any different day, I love different things. Wow, what do I enjoy?
I mean, like, for a nice dinner for you and your husband, what would that be, do you think?
A nice dinner. I enjoy fish a lot. I enjoy fish because it's just so simple and so, like, it's not labor intensive to chew on, and it's just like it just melts in your mouth. And
nice piece of fresh fish.
Yeah, a nice piece of fresh fish.
Baked.
Yes, baked. Yeah. Definitely baked.
And with some veggies.
Yeah, with some veggies. I don't think I can give you one meal that I'm like, what am I crazy about? I enjoy Indian food a lot.
Yeah, you see, I mean, if somebody asked me that, I'd say like lamb curry. I mean, that's kind of, I know, you know, I've got my sort of, but I suppose working with food, you've got so many, so much food in your brain all the time, isn't it? And you always, every time you see an ingredient, you're thinking, what can I do different?
What can I do different?
Do you kind of, is that how you?
Yeah, no, definitely.
So when you're shopping, it's different to when I'm shopping, I'm sure.
No, and I enjoy a lot of herbs, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't have a meal without fresh herbs.
Interesting.
Like parsley. I enjoy parsley a lot. Mint, coriander. Yeah. Those are like my three absolute, like, if I don't have that in my kitchen.
I made a nice bean dip on the weekend, just with some tinned beans, with some mint and coriander and parsley and lemon juice in it.
Yes.
And it was just so fresh. It was absolutely delicious and easy as well.
Yeah, true.
Which I suppose a lot of food is until you, till you've cooked it. I mean, a lot of good food, simple food is quite the preparation.
I mean, you need such few ingredients to create, like, you know, seven different dishes, and that's why, like, when I have, when I get new stuff, and they're like, "No, we don't understand your food or how you cook sometimes," and I'm like, "If you actually pay attention, I'm using the same things." Across all the dishes, it's the same thing, just like, just done differently here, you know.
Yeah, just different combinations.
Yeah, definitely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Paul, thanks so much for your time this afternoon. It's really brilliant talking to you. Inspirational. Likewise,
Thank you so much.
I thought it was so sweet, the shout-out she gave to her mum's steam buns as one of her early food memories, and that her first culinary success was making shakalaka, two very South African dishes in a food culture dominated A, by meat, and B, by European traditions. You do really get a sense of her energy and fearlessness, commitment in that discussion. So if you're looking to cater an event, check out the Food I Love You website. Or pop down on the first Sunday of every month to Victoria Yards and check out what's on the Food I Love You menu. You can follow the Including Society Project on Instagram. Voices from SA is hosted on Audio Boom. You may subscribe to Voices from SA via Apple Podcasts. Please leave a comment or a rating. You can also subscribe via Spotify, Radio Public, Deezer, or indeed wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your colleagues, tell your friends, tell the world. Until next time, I'm Nicholas Claude. Cheers.